everybody. This is John Tatey welcoming you back to Pop Mom, the podcast where culture is relative. Yes, it's time again for my mom, Bonnie Tatey, to share her view of pop culture, small town life, and those riddles of human nature. They are riddling us. On this episode, we discuss an episode of the... This episode, does that make sense? On this episode, we discuss an episode of the comedy series Curb Your Enthusiasm. Check this copy before you read it, John. Let's bring Mom in now. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. My copywriting is not the best this morning, but we'll make it through, I think. Can't wait to see what a minefield I've left for myself in the when we tee up the review. So that's to come.
How was Easter?
Easter was nice. Lonely. Anna took the kids to go see her sister. Sounds like a bad marriage when I put it like that. Like, oh, she went to her sister's place. Oh,
no. And her parents are there.
Her parents are there. And they had a nice Easter. And I stayed home and watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, as it happens, and cleaned up the house, played video games.
Did you make your own Easter egg hunt? No?
I didn't. The city was so quiet and nice on Easter, though. I love sticking around for a holiday in the city because it's just so subdued. Memorial Day weekend is nice like that, too. It's just so chill here.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That's really nice. We went to Merrick's house and had lots and lots of delicious food. My sister was up, so that was a lot of fun to have her here. Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Did Merrick cook? Merrick, my brother?
Merrick and Sarah both cooked. Oh. And yeah, they did a great job. It was really delicious. I will tell you the one thing that was a little disappointing was a cake we got from King Arthur.
Really?
You know, the King Arthur. Yes. Very dry. We got a carrot cake, which I thought was just going to be so sumptuous, but I only had one nut and I think I had three or four pieces of it. Not at one time, you know, that they sent it home with us. Uh-huh. And, you know, no pineapple, no nothing. It was just, and it was dry. Did I say that?
Yeah. Yeah, you said
that. It was dry. Well, it was very dry and, it was disappointing. And even the frosting wasn't really very cream cheesy as you expect it to be in a carrot cake. So,
wow. I'm surprised King Arthur flour would let you down.
And that's the second time. So they're out. They're out.
I thought this was a familiar story. Yeah. What is the problem, you think? A flour company of all places, you'd expect to
I don't know
their way around a cake.
Yes, it has such a reputation, you know, and if you visit the store, there's just tons and tons and tons of boxes of this and that, but the cake was so boring, as was the first one that I got from there.
Yeah.
So
maybe flour's more of a side gig for King Arthur. You know, he's more about the swords and the chivalry and all that, and the flour was sort of like a spinoff business of his.
I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder. Maybe he's just very good at milling flour and, and should stop there.
Yeah. Past the making of the flour, they're not good. Yes. They don't know what to do with the flour. They just know how to make it.
That's right. And that is sometimes true of an artisan. You know, they have a specialty in one area and that's it.
You know, while we're speaking of cake again, last week on the podcast was our cake extravaganza. Suddenly we had this avalanche of email with people answering my now perennial question of what is your favorite cake. I got a message from loyal listener Frank T, and he regretted that he wasn't able to get in on Cake-a-palooza, which is still going. Yeah, as I said last week, you can always email us and tell us what your favorite kind of cake is and then talk about whatever else you want to talk about or not. Just email us about cake. Frank said, I wish I had gotten in on it because I would have been able to talk about how much I love a good spice cake.
Mm.
And I said, ugh, spice cake. That's the worst answer I've heard yet. And then I spent the afternoon thinking about spice cake. And I messaged him back a little later and said, you know what? Actually, I could really go for a piece of spice cake right now. I don't know how that happened.
Well, that we're very suggestive. We have very minds that are really in tune to suggestions. Because I can be watching television at night and somebody will eat a, I don't really want to say this, but somebody will eat a hot dog and I'll say to Daddy, oh, I could really go for a hot dog.
You know, so, this is the dumbest thing, but growing up, I'd be watching football on Sundays and there's all the ads for all the foods. And I think, like, who could eat all this food? You know, that they advertise it so much. It's just, I don't know. It always struck me as odd. And now as an adult, like, I'm totally watching football on Sunday. Like, yeah, if you hit me with the Pizza Hut ad, I'm digging out my phone. I want pizza, the foods that I never want. Like, the rest of the week on Sunday during football, yeah, they can get me. That Uber Eats ad every time. Oh, got to Uber up some wings, some disgusting wings. But, yeah,
some disgusting. It works. If we had that here, there would be like a line of cars just going up the street all the time.
It's expensive. That's what makes you pull back, is you look at the bill at the end of the month. Not that they send you a bill, but if you ever look at how much you're racking up on Uber Eats, if you've been getting a little too eager with it, yeah, it adds up fast. Because there's a delivery fee and the taxes, and some restaurants have more expensive prices on Uber Eats than they do on their regular menu. They're allowed to do that. Because they got to make up their, you know, they've got to make their margin too. So, yeah, it adds up fast. But also, it's great. It's great to have someone bring food to your door. What can I say? The wonders of modern living.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's true.
My biggest treat is when Merrick is getting dinner at Pizza Chef or maybe even Chinese, and he delivers it to us. That's our Uber Eats.
That works. Yeah, I remember. There's so many things growing up in rural New Hampshire that seem like faraway dreams and food delivery. You know, you'd see that on TV and it just seemed weird that people were able to get a pizza delivered to their place.
Delivered. Yeah.
On the TV. But yeah, I bet Uber Eats will make it out to you at some point. Their spread
continues. Would be lovely. They can deliver it to the cemetery if they have to.
Did you get in trouble with the parking authorities? Why is parking meters on our discussion topics this week?
First, I'm going to tell you, I've had two parking tickets in the last month. And I got the first parking ticket in Concord at a parking meter. You know, back in the dark ages, you used to put a couple pennies or if you were going to be a long time, a nickel into the meter, turned the little handle, and you went on your merry way.
It was very satisfying to turn that handle, too.
Now, it's a little different. If they even accept change. Well, so I was going into the antique store to look around a little bit. There was a snow squall, and the sun was out. And I put my credit card in the machine, and then I couldn't read any of the prompts.
Right.
And it was really, really snow squalling. And I said, the hell with it. And I took my card out because I couldn't read the screen. And I went in and shopped. So I got a parking ticket, which was irritating. But, you know, I knew what I was doing. And I made that choice.
A calculated risk that did not pay off.
Right. But I still don't think it was right. But I wasn't going to argue.
You weren't going to write a letter or anything?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I just waited to the very last day that I could. And I paid it. And I went to Concord on that day also. And parked in front of the pizza place where there's no signs. And, you know, there's no meters because you have to walk to the little kiosk. And I got another ticket, but they don't have any signs that say, you know, this is not a free space.
Good revenue generator for them. Plus, they don't have to pay for the sign. It's a win-win for the parking authorities.
So I got another ticket, which I paid. And then I went to Hanover. Good God. This machine also does accept some coins, which it says, first you have to remember to press the button to start. And then you have to put in your license plate number.
Yep.
And then your coins. And then it asks for your license plate number again. So
I hate those kiosks.
Then you have. Then I said, "Well, I don't know where the readout is for how much I put all my silver coins in, but I have no idea how much time I had. I couldn't find that on the machine. I'm sure it's there. The little screen is a little difficult to read until you get the right angle."
This is an amazing usability report on these crappy parking kiosks.
So I put my credit card in and had to put my license plate in again. That's three times now. Took the card out, had to put my license plate number in again. Thank God we were parked right in front of the kiosk. And then I just said, you know what? I don't know where we are in the process, but I'm done.
Yeah. Did you get a ticket?
I did not get a ticket.
Oh, good.
It's not been a great parking week for me. But, you know, I got to tell you, these readout things are not my friend.
No, they're not. Those kiosks are not your friend at all. Because, hey, they don't mind if you get a ticket. The kiosk doesn't care.
Well, they make it very difficult. And they're all different. Everyone has a different setup.
I guess it's nice because you, in theory, can use your credit card or your phone with some of them or whatever. In Chicago, where the parking situation is ridiculous because they gave this company like a 100-year contract and they get all the money. The company gets the money from all the parking fees. The city doesn't because of this dumb contract, you know, billion-year contract they signed. But in any case, it's supposed to be easier, but the contract was pretty straightforward in the past. As you said, Mom, you pull up and you put your quarters in the machine that's right in front of your car. That's it.
Right.
The design of it was very friendly. And if the coin slot was jammed, that you wouldn't get a ticket. That was the rule, right?
Right. Right.
Now it's complicated. Do I put the slip here? Do I even need a slip?
Yeah.
Is it in the computer? It's different every town you go to.
And that's when that's what I left, you know, because there is no, in Hanover, there is no put the receipt under your window. It's in the ether, you know, like maybe I did that right. Maybe I didn't. I hope my car's here when I come back and let's go. So I don't have a conclusion, but I just really feel like I'm being pushed out.
Remember when we parked in that garage or that complex that had like the thinnest spaces you've ever seen?
My God.
How many cars did I hit on the way into that space? Three or four, I think. And then we just hightailed it out of there. Good God. I'm sure I still have a number of outstanding parking tickets from the town of Hanover, too, because at a certain point I went to college in Hanover, and at a certain point I was just like, fuck it. Because
I'm over it.
Between the college and the town, they prey on you like termites.
It's awful.
You can hardly walk down the street without getting a ticket for something. So at a certain point, I did just give up. And nothing ever happened to me, so.
Yeah, yeah. And when I got out, when I crossed the street, there was a police car there. And I waited about 5 minutes to see if I could find him. But, you know, God knows where he was. Probably in Molly's Balloon having a nice lunch. But I wanted to find him to find out if I had done my ticket right. And again, you just say, oh, the hell with it. Whatever happens.
I was on my way to the drugstore the other day in Lincoln Square proper. You know that part of town here where all the little shops are. And at the corner of Lawrence and Western, a pretty busy intersection, there was
very busy.
a like folded up cardboard box that was smoldering and smoking like it had been lit on fire somehow. And I'm standing there at the corner waiting for the light to change. Like, what do I do as a citizen here? I didn't even want to like step on it to stamp it out because I didn't know what it was.
I know.
I cross the street and then a police car pulls into the square and parks and they get out. And so I walk over to them and say, hey, there's something burning on the corner of Lawrence and Western across the way there in front of the Walgreens. And they said, okay, we'll take a peek and check it out. And I was just like, wow, I think that's the first like neighborhood interaction with a police officer I've ever had. I was a decent citizen. I informed the authorities. I felt real good about myself. Thank God that police car pulled up right then. I mean, thank God, not like it would have been a huge disaster. I don't think nobody's house was burning down from this little piece of cardboard, but it was a very satisfying neighborhood. That's right. It soothed my conscience. And it was a nice neighborly transaction with the cops, which you don't hear about too much.
No. Or if you do, it's something that really should just happen every day. And it's turned into an extravaganza of a kindness, some small kindness.
What about that story you showed me last year about the cop who went and got the PlayStation for the kid? You remember that? You got to dig that up so we can share that on the podcast sometime.
Okay.
Anyway, we're not trying to pepper you all with copaganda. It's just I had this nice encounter with a couple of friendly police officers. That's all.
And it is very nice. Now, this is interesting. I'm going to tell you.
But it better be interesting now that you've teed it up that way. You know, when we say something's going to be interesting, we have to deliver.
This is going to tie right into the parking meter story. But I could tell you this in terms of I went to Las Vegas and lost a lot of money last week. But instead, I'm going to tell you what really happened is I went to the laundromat last week and lost a lot of money at the laundromat. This is the laundromat uptown. I would say this used to be a tip-top place to go. Half the machines were inoperable. I lost 75 cents in the powdered detergent machine. I lost a dollar in the quarter-changing machine. And in a machine that charges $4.50, I got $3.50 in and some extra quarters that I lost count of. And then the machine jammed and wouldn't take any more money.
Oh, man. Wow. You're racking up the losses here.
I know. So I tried to use a trick that the parking, what is he called? The parking ranger in Concord told me. I don't know what they're
That's
called.
That's good, though. I like parking ranger. Yes.
He told me that if you put the coin in the slot and then spin it in, like spin it.
Yeah, I get
towards
it.
Your, yeah. Okay. That the machine will sometimes accept that. So I was using that technique and the laundromat to get.
What? That. I am so dubious of this tip, but who would know but the parking ranger? So
yeah. You put it right at the edge of the slot and then like spin it downwards.
Oh my God. I'm so dubious of this tip, but I really want to hear if there's anybody out there who's ever heard this before or who can say that it actually works.
Well, it does.
Okay. It so does you've work. Had a good experience with it.
Well, in the end, I didn't, but some of them.
Right, because all the machines were broken. In.
Yeah.
Maybe you wore them out by spinning all those quarters in, and machine just gave up the ghost. Did. They're going to have to put up a sign that says, do not spin your quarters, please.
So I went back the next day. Nobody was there that day. So I went back the next day, and I said, look, you know, I think my odds would have been better in Las Vegas, but I lost a lot of money in the laundromat. The cleaners is right next door and they are in charge of it. So, and the girl just said, how much did you lose? And I said, about $13, $14. She said, okay. And she just gave me $13.50 and that was it.
Wow. There's going to be a lot of people going to the Concord dry cleaners after this airs.
No, no, the New London dry
cleaners. Oh, New London. Excuse me. London. Yeah, at Concord, they've got their laundromats in good working order, I'm sure. Should have gone to the Concord laundromat.
Yeah, I don't even know where the laundromat is. You know, they're in neighborhoods, so I don't really know. But I expected bigger things from this laundromat.
From the New London, New Hampshire laundromat?
I did. I the last time I was there, I was washing some quilts so that I, you know, heavy duty. So I was using the heavy duty machine.
Well, between the parking meters and the laundromat, I don't know if people can stand all the excitement we've hit them with on the podcast so far. But there's more to come. It's time to talk about our review. You ready, Mom?
I am.
This week we are talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm. Curb Your Enthusiasm is the long-running comedy series by Seinfeld co-creator Larry David. In each episode, the curmudgeonly Larry deals with a new array of awkward, peculiar, or exasperating social situations. The show is currently in its 12th and final season, but for this week's podcast, Mom and I are reviewing an episode from season 11 entitled The Mini Bar, in which Larry tries to get a talentless actress off his new project, lubricates the conversation from the middle seat of a dinner party, and proposes a new menu of snacks for the mini bars at his friend's hotel. Here's a clip.
But so, you know silly. What, Larry? Will you meet me in the kitchen for a second? I need your help with
something. Sure, of course.
I like the tiles that look like wood.
If you get heavy, heavy wood.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
It's a disaster. It's a complete disaster. My dinner party done.
Yeah. Because Andy and Cassie are in the middle.
That's what it is.
And they can't middle. You have to be able to carry the conversation. Yes. You have to be interesting. You're the point guard there. You're distributing the ball.
They can't fucking middle.
They can't middle. Look at that.
Family loves fishing now. Andy loves it. I love it. Skylar loves it. I can't believe it. Do you like fishing, Cheryl?
No.
Oh, my God, fishing. Can we save this?
I'll take care of it.
Thank you, Larry.
It's the bucket of bait, okay? And which is called chum. They call it chum. I don't know why. And she takes it and she puts it onto the hook. She knew what she was doing.
Okay.
She was born to it.
Okay.
She was great.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry.
This dinner's not going very well.
I'm sorry.
And the reason it's not going well is because the wrong people are in the middle.
What?
Yeah, you can't handle the middle. You're not a middler.
Andy, really? Not everybody has the personality for the middle.
It's very presumptuous of you to even be sitting here.
Curb Your Enthusiasm airs on HBO, and it is also available on Max, formerly known as Twitter. Mom, was this episode pretty, pretty, pretty good?
You know, I've grown to dislike Larry David and everything he stands for. Just by watching this show, he's annoying.
Uh-huh.
He's a nudge. And we watched a couple of episodes of this season, you know, watching how it goes out. And unfortunately, really, the only thing that makes me laugh is Leon.
Leon, his roommate, basically. Yeah.
Who has the filthiest mouth you would ever want to meet. Terrible. I liked the premise of the dinner party. That really intrigues me of how,
yes,
how everybody should be seated and what they contribute. And that really never occurred to me.
Yeah, I loved that. I think this to me was the key insight of the episode is they sit down at this dinner party and this boring guy and his boring wife take the middle seats at the rectangular table. Right. So Susie and Jeff, who are hosting, they're at the heads of the table.
Right.
And then these two boring people end up in the middle and they just kill the conversation. And their boring conversation is so true to life. I say that after we've just talked about parking meters and laundromats for 20 minutes, but he's talking about looking for something in a bookstore and finding it. And they're replacing the wood on their floors. And I love when the wife says, have you ever had to replace the wood or redo floors in your house, Cheryl? Or have you ever been fishing, Cheryl? Like, that's how they try to get other people involved with these just thudding questions. And I thought it was this amazing observation And then Larry switches things around and he puts himself in the middle and he gets everybody fired up and gets the conversation moving and sort of looks at his buddy Andy, who was boring everyone, and says, see, that's how it's done. And I really think it's a good insight. I think it speaks to Larry, like the genius of Larry. Like, he agitates everybody, but he gets their energy up and he gets their spirits up. So Larry is sort of showing why he's not a bad guy in that scene, but also it's so true. And
well, it really, it brings home what an art it is, because it really is
a conversation, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
Because Anna and I will have trouble with people who we're having dinner with or having a social encounter with, what have you, who make us feel boring.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, afterward, you're like, boy, they were talking so much and they were talking the whole time and I just couldn't come up with anything to say. But to me, it's not entirely your fault in that situation. If the other person is being boring, that's such a force to overcome.
Well, it is. And I think that's sometimes where I learned how to say something that was like the paddles when you're trying to overcome a heart attack, is that if you say something really shocking that people are not really expecting, it jolts them into being alive again.
I think so. I was doing my Simpsons trivia, not the public one. That went very well, by the way. I don't think I followed up on that on the podcast. Yeah. But thanks to everybody who came out to Beguile Brewing for a great night of Simpsons trivia. But I was doing my home game with my buddies last Friday. And one person who was calling in by computer, she had her iPad. And the iPad sometimes wasn't working. You have to write down your answers in this game, right? And then hold them up after I ask the question. And her iPad kept malfunctioning on her. So every question, I'd ask it. And then a few seconds later, it'd be like, oh, God, I'd have to hear this every time. And at a certain point, I said, just go get a pen and paper. Enough of the iPad. Like, all you need for this game is something to write with and on. Go take care of that. And she just wouldn't, for whatever reason. A couple days later, a friend of mine said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I was really laughing and found it funny how annoyed you were getting at her for this iPad stuff. And I said, hey, you know, I grew up on David Letterman and learned that voicing your irritation and annoyance can sometimes introduce a charge into the room that where it otherwise might be an awkward energy, like having to stop the game constantly because our friend's iPad wasn't working could really suck the energy out of the room, you know? So I'm trying to thread that or walk that line between making her feel bad. Like, I wanted to know I'm still joking around and like it's all okay, but also like keeping the energy up and speaking to the truth in the room, which is that everybody else is kind of annoyed too. They're just being too polite to say anything, right?
Right.
You need a little of that poking and agitating sometime in a social setting. And I thought that this dinner party, you know, who sits in the middle thing that Larry set up was a really genius way to explore that.
Now, given that, though, and being in Hollywood, I don't think place cards would have been out of order.
Oh, interesting.
That's just my opinion.
You associate Hollywood with place cards. Explain that.
Well, it just seems like a dinner party would be a very more lavish than something we're going to do in New Hampshire. Everybody,
In general,
I'm saying. And that you want everything, you know, you want the centerpiece to be perfect. You want your dishes to be nice and clean. Everything is looked at more than once, I would say, just to make sure everything is lovely and just what you want. But the seating arrangement, I think, can be do or die.
It can. So, and you got to think fast, you know, especially when you're bringing a group to a restaurant. My wife, my lovely, darling wife, Anna, who I love and who is lovely and a darling, is terrible at this. She will, I mean, she's actually creative and she'll find innovative ways to screw up the seating that I never would have imagined. But she is conversation poison when it comes to figuring out who's going to sit where. And I understand it's high pressure. You've got like 10, 15 seconds to make, and you don't want to be rude. You don't want to take someone's seat. But yeah, you got to be able to navigate that seating, because for the next couple hours, that's it for you.
Yes.
Oh, it's high stakes. Right. It's making me nervous just talking about it.
Well, the other thing too is I'm gonna say that once you introduce alcohol, some people that might be zippy on their own, not so good once they right? So
yeah, well, that's a lot of calculations that got to go into it.
But I think in the end, if you do it right, you'll have a fabulous gathering. If you don't, you might not.
So good luck, everyone, on your dinner parties this weekend.
Yeah, get those place cards out.
Yeah. Now, what about the mini bar? Because I really thought of you with this plot line, and I found it so funny to watch Larry and his buddies frolic in the supermarket picking out things that they think should go in the mini bar. So basically, he has this conversation with his friend, Freddie Funkhauser, who owns a chain of hotels called the Funk House. And Larry has been underwhelmed by mini bars in the past. And so he proposes to create his own mini bar menu, stuff that you would be excited to find when you open up that mini bar. And some of the things he chooses are wasabi peas. He's very excited about the wasabi peas.
Yeah.
The figs he proposes to include in the mini bar. Anyway, his mini bar gets a very unenthusiastic reception from Freddie.
As it should.
As it should. It's pretty bad and totally impractical as well. But I wanted to put it to you, Mom. I know you don't stay in a lot of hotels, but it happens from time to time. What would you put in the mini bar if it were the Bonnie Tatey hotel chain?
Well, I think the one thing I'm always attracted to, you can get them anywhere, is the peanut M&Ms.
I can't believe that. Number one on my list as well. There must be peanut M&Ms in there.
I think it has something to do with the color of the bag. I don't know. But I cannot resist that. I could even not resist it if I had a bag of peanut M&Ms in my pocketbook.
That yellow bag, you're right. It's so enticing. And a peanut M&M is close to a perfect candy. Man,
it
I love it.
It's definitely the perfect
great
candy.
Great in a hotel room. Great at the movies. Like, it's my go-to at the movies for sure. I agree. Peanut M&Ms are an essential. What else?
I would like to see some kind of pretzels, but not normal. You know, I would like to see pretzel nuggets or...
This is crazy, Mom. So next thing on my list is pretzel chips. You know, those flat...
Oh!
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. They're so... Yes, that would be perfect. Yes.
We are on the same wavelength today.
God.
That is weird. Pretzel nuggets is good, too. I like pretzel nuggets with peanut butter inside them, but we already have the peanut M&Ms, so we don't have to load up everything with peanuts.
Right.
I thought wasabi peas was actually a good choice by Larry. I liked that.
Well, I would never pick that, but I can see where some people would say yay to that. That would not appeal to me at all.
What else? Figs, I mentioned, olives, licorice.
Oh, olives.
It's choices were so bad.
They were terrible. Black licorice, even black licorice, it's horrible. Well, I like it, but, you know, nobody else does. Nobody else does. And if you're going to put black licorice in, put that all sorts in. You know what those are?
No.
They're pastel colored squares.
Oh.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
Do you know what?
I can picture them.
They have a layer of black licorice, and then they have some like slightly hard frosting layers. They're very pretty. They have one that has a little sprinkles all around it, and then they have some that are like black licorice tubes with filling inside. But again, that's what I would offer instead of black licorice. There was no imagination in his choices. Figs. Nobody wants that.
You don't think figs are imaginative?
Well, if we're going imaginative, no. No, not even, I mean, a Fig Newton. Some people might enjoy a Fig Newton, but
That's a good choice. Oh, yeah, some little pack of Fig Newtons in there. Yeah.
Healthy.
And to drink, what about to drink?
I need a Coke in there.
Okay, fair enough. I was going to say, I'd like to see an Orangina in there.
Oh, that, wow. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When's the last time you had an Orangina?
I would say years.
Yeah, 20 years would be my guess for me. But I could go for one right now as I'm thinking of it. And if we're in the hotel mini bar, yes.
Snap it right up. Yep. That's a good one. Very refreshing, very satisfying. Yeah.
And a little bit of a vacation. Like, you're not going to have an Orangina every day, right. I don't think.
No.
But it's a vacation beverage.
It is. It is. And, you know, you could even add a little champagne if you were inclined.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what a fun breakfast that could be out of the mini bar.
Yeah, peanut M&M's and Orangina. It does a body good.
Peanut M&M's are good for any time.
I didn't have too much to say with you about the talentless actress storyline, although I did find her, when she was making the tape with Cheryl, I did find her terrible performance quite funny.
Yes.
You got anything to say about that
one? No, I mean, it shows her talent as an actress in real life, but...
That's right. In being able to play someone with so little talent
so
on
little
the show.
Talent. Yeah. I do say the show gets a little confusing because, for instance, Freddie Funkhauser is Vince Vaughn, and he just looks so Vince Vaughn-y that it's hard to put him in the role of Freddie Funkhauser. Did that make sense? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah, there's something distinctive about Vince Vaughn and his voice. Not that there wasn't about Super Dave,
right.
You know, who, but... yeah, it's hard not to think of him for Vince Vaughn for whatever reason. And I don't think Larry really cares about that. Like, sure, think of him as Vince Vaughn. Because, you know, we got Patton Oswalt on there and he's, you know, Harry the Dentist or whatever his role was. But it's just Patton Oswalt, you know?
Right. Yes.
So that's fine. That's how the show works.
But I have to keep reminding myself that they're not who I think they are.
In the story. Right. Yeah. Richard Lewis. The recently passed Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
Man, I was watching a season 12 episode and, you know, I really don't like to have this feeling. And I feel bad saying it here, but I will say it to be honest. But I just found him hard to look at. And I'm a real advocate for old and and ailing people for being on TV. I loved that Dick Clark came back and did New Year's Eve for a number of years after he had his stroke that made it difficult for him to speak clearly. Like, I was still happy to have him up there, and I thought he should have been up there. Just the same, Richard Lewis should have been doing Curb just up until the end as he did. But man, he looks like a skeleton, and it is hard to watch and to laugh.
Right, because you're feeling that empathy. But again, it's almost the same thing. It's just two different emotions.
That's right. You're trying to reconcile the real life and the story. And the line between them is so thin on Curb.
Yes.
That, yeah. But I think Larry just doesn't worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Larry. I think he's a cute character. I just want to give him a hug, even though he'd hate that. I mean, I can see how you're tired of him and you find him annoying. The show is mostly people yelling at each other, and there's only so much of it that you can take. I watched a bunch of it while the kids and Anna were away, and there was a certain point at which I was like, okay, I've seen Larry yell at Susie Essman enough times, and I'll take a little break. So I certainly understand where you're coming from, but I do love Larry. And I also, it was not in this episode, but I think one before it, he approaches a friend of his who owes him money and says, hey, you still owe me $6,000 for that vacation we took. And the friend gets angry at him, and Larry protests, I'm not the bad guy here. I'm not the bad guy. And that pretty much sums up the whole show, is Larry protesting that he's not the bad guy. And frankly, me agreeing with him most of the time.
Yeah.
Mom, what is your grade for this episode?
This episode hit a lot of things that I did used to like about the show. So I'm going to give it a B+.
Wow. Okay. Watch it sparingly.
That's right.
I think you can enjoy it that way.
I loved Larry going in the kitchen with Susie and collaborating with her, because usually they're at each other's throats. And I really enjoyed that.
I love when he and Susie get along for a couple of minutes, too, because it makes the fighting funnier.
Right.
Like, you need that contrast. I couldn't tell you, you know, which seasons were better than others, but I think the show has ebbed and flowed. I really enjoyed this more than I expected because I took a long break from Curb. And I think seasons 8, 9, 10, I don't know if I've seen all of those.
Yeah.
Because it did just seem like, especially with him and Susie, they would just shout at each other.
Yeah.
And there was no real comedy to it. But yeah, I'd love seeing him go in the kitchen and scheme with her. And they do get along more. There's another episode in this season 11 where he convinces her to sew a new robe for a Klansman after he spills coffee on the Klansman's white robe. And she, of course, is incensed to have been put in this position. But yeah, I like to see them getting along and being friends a little bit. It makes the whole relationship make more sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, ultimately, she could just make Jeff, I'm sorry, what is his name?
Yeah, Jeff.
Make his life absolutely miserable.
And often does.
True.
I mean, there. How many plot lines are there about Jeff having to get some gift for Susie to calm her down or whatever, because he's had some affair? I mean, he's not on his best behavior either.
True.
Mom, there's an episode in this season 11 with Bill Hader playing a number of characters that I recommend to you.
Okay, season 11?
Season 11.
Okay.
I should look it up. I apologize to the listeners, but it's toward the end of the season. Bill Hader's in it. It's real funny.
Okay.
Check it
out.
I
love him.
Oh, I think he is. To me, he's like, there's certain comedians that are like receptacles for the culture. Like, I think of Conan O'Brien this way. Like, he captures so much of comedy culture in his being that he's himself funny, but he also is channeling so much comedy wisdom because he is so into comedy himself.
Right.
And Bill Hader is like the ultimate comedy nerd, very funny himself, is able to channel, I feel like, all these different voices and different facets of comedy because he's absorbed so much. I love to watch Bill Hader in anything.
I agree. I think he is a real talent, and I don't know why he doesn't get more accolades. I guess he's not.
Because I think he just shows up and does a good job. You know, he's not spectacular, I think he's spectacular.
I do, too.
Mom, what is your recommendation this week?
This week, I have a recommendation, George Harrison, The Reluctant Beetle by Philip Norman. I would say this is a little sad reading. I'm not sure that Philip Norman was George Harrison's biggest fan, because you certainly can put a spin on things. But this was rather not really dark, but dusky in his life.
Okay.
Not an especially great childhood, and seemed like he was always searching, whether it was through his music or drugs or religion. Or women. Seemed like you spent a lot of time searching for the right whatever. And if you're interested in the Beatles, it's good to get his take on the whole thing.
I remember watching the Peter Jackson documentary, not all of it, but some of the Let It Be documentary that came out a year or two ago. And I was really struck by George Harrison, like, being kind of nervous to try out his songs.
Yeah. Well, they didn't give him a lot of respect or a lot of rope to explore. And he really did have some talent, for sure.
You could feel that. I mean, here's a guy, granted, who wouldn't be intimidated in the presence of Paul McCartney and John Lennon,
right?
Who, you know, these incredible songwriters. Still, like, it's amazing. Like, this is George effing Harrison here. And it's amazing to see him, you know, just be so meek and uncertain about his own songwriting. It breaks your heart a little bit.
Yeah.
It sounds like this book maybe does the same thing.
Yeah, it definitely does. I think he was closer to John and Paul's talent, and yet he seems to get assessed down to Ringo's area. That
Poor
wasn't
Ringo,
very nice.
Geez. No, that was like a double backhand there.
Well, I didn't mean it that way, but he certainly was talented. And if you go and look at his collection of songs that he wrote and sang, I think you'll be very shocked and pleasantly, very pleasantly surprised.
Wow. Okay. So that's George Harrison, The Reluctant Beetle by Philip Norman. Run, don't walk to your local library to check that one out. This will do it for that edition. That's not how it goes. That will do it for this edition of Pop Mom. Jesus.
It was the power together. Outage.
It was edited out, but there was a power outage in the middle of this podcast, in the very middle of it. That's never happened before. You, Scott, hopefully by now has edited out that piece of Pop Mom history, but the power outage did throw us a little bit, but I just cannot read this copy this week. Here we go. That's all for this edition of Pop Mom. This episode of the podcast was edited by Scott Jones. Thank you, Scott. Mom and I will be back soon to talk about more pop culture. Oh, my notes end here. What should we talk about, Mom?
Something interesting.
Something interesting? No. No, I refuse. We'll talk about this off the air. Thank you for listening. You enjoy the show. Tell your friends. That's important. Plus, we love to get email. It's popmom@ological.net. Talk to us about anything, your favorite cake, even your favorite pie if you want, or anything else that comes to mind. Well, we always welcome suggestions for something to watch and talk about, especially right now. It's a little dry right now, folks, so we could use your suggestions. We love you. Mom and I will talk to you again real soon. Bye for now, Mom.
Bye, Johnny. I love you.
Love you, too.